NBC News Radio, I'm Molly Page. Expectations are a little bit lower this morning as the so-called fiscal cliff is in sight. NBC's Kristen Welker reports that at least the dialogue continues.
Sources close to the talks tell NBC News Senate leaders Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell are working to draft a small stopgap plan that could include extending unemployment insurance benefits, protecting about 30 million Americans from paying the alternative minimum tax, and allowing tax rates to increase on the wealthiest Americans. But this issue remains a major sticking point, with many Republicans resisting any tax increase at all.
The latest winter storm to hit the Northeast is now over, leaving behind a foot of snow in some spots. Forecasters say the next few days there will be strong winds and it will be cold. The young female student who died after being gang raped on a bus in India was cremated today. Millions of people across India are demanding greater protection for women from sexual violence. This is NBC News Radio. Santa Monica, California may be too physically fit for some. From sunrise to sunset, enthusiasts are working out in the city's parks and trainers are out there with them. But now complaints about people making too much noise and blocking walkways while they're exercising is prompting the city to consider regulations to restrict some of the activity. This will be the first year since 1972 we will usher in the new year without Dick Clark at the helm. NBC News Radio Zach Stein reports.
It will be the first time in the last 40 years Dick Clark will not be with us to host New Year's Eve in Times Square. Clark's wife, Carrie, struggled to hold back tears as she helped crews install Waterford Crystal Triangles on this year's ball.
Times Square is the place to be on New Year's Eve, and how true it is. And I'll miss the kiss this year, but I'll feel its presence, and I hope many of you will, too.
Dick Clark passed away this year, and one of the 288 Waterford Crystals has his name inscribed in it.
I'm Molly Page, NBC News Radio.
Do you snore? Do you share a room with someone whose snoring keeps you up at night? Finally, for the first time ever, you can put a stop to snoring instantly with Snorebreak. Snorebreak is not a nose or mouthpiece. It's not a drug. And it's not a procedure. Snorebreak is a patented liner that goes beneath the pillowcase and reduces snoring from the very first night. The secret is a fusion of natural extracts that dramatically improve breathing. Snorebreak is comfortable, easy, and virtually undetectable. Snorebreak works, and right now we're sending risk-free trials to listeners in your area. Just call 800-501-3429. Don't suffer one more sleepless night. Whether it's light snoring or heavy snoring, Snorebreak will help put a stop to it the very first night. Hurry and take part in this limited-time risk-free trial. Just call 800-501-3429. That's 800-501-3429. Call 1-800-501-3429.
Hey, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
We'll be out of town for the holidays, but you can still listen in to one of our best ups.
So listen to Foodie and the Beast every Sunday at 11 right here on 1500 AM.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and I'm joined by my co-host, David Taylor, with the law firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. We have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Jody Ruth, who's the founder and principal of Redstones LLC, Barbara Newhouse, the president and CEO of the Arthritis Foundation for the Mid-Atlantic region, Robert Massey, the owner and president of Bright Star Care, and Tim Schaefer, the president and CEO of Safe Awake LLC. First up is a young lady by the name of Jody Ruth, who is the founder and principal of Redstones. What is Redstones, Jody?
Redstones is a financial and management consulting firm, and we work with well-funded startups such as Genovation Cars out of Rockville, Maryland, the area's very own electric car company. Up to the other end of the spectrum, we helped the Walt Disney Company launched Mobile ESPN.
So give us a little bit more detail. Why would a company hire you?
I run the financial strategy practice for our business, and companies would hire us to help them develop business plans, to develop financial forecasts, to help them manage their cash flow, and also to help evaluate their customer lifetime value, which are the most profitable customers over time, things along those lines. We'll also help them do financings and help them in an M&A activity.
And you get involved after the initial rounds of funding?
We can get involved from the early stages on through the time that there is an exit.
When was the company founded?
2003.
How'd you get the idea for the business?
It was a culmination of my whole career. I had been at AOL and prior to the time that I started this company, and when there was a reorganization and I left AOL, I took some time to think about what made sense for me next and realized that the successes in my career had been because I was a change agent, a fixer, and that I really liked doing that. I also had been on the services side of the business earlier in my career. I liked that aspect as well. And the time had come for me to really kind of go back to my entrepreneurial roots. It was time to have my own company. So all of that put together led to the formation of the consulting firm and our work with growth companies.
Yeah. What is a change agent?
A change agent is a person who helps leaders and groups of people move from where they are to where they want to go. And many times that path involves a lot of roadblocks, obstacles, mud and rocks in the path.
Right. Why are you so good at that?
I think it's because I have the conviction that people can do more than they think they can. I know that the impossible can be possible. I've seen it. I also realize that the world always doesn't end when you make a mistake. So the fear of making a mistake doesn't prevent me from taking a chance, because I believe that when a mistake occurs, you can say, wow, that wasn't right, but we can do something else to fix it. So I understand the importance of actually moving forward. I've seen so many companies and so many businesses be stuck because they're afraid to make a change.
Jody, do you help them define where they want to go, or do they know where they want to go and just don't know how to get there?
Many times the leaders of our clients already have that strategic vision, but they don't know how to get there, or they are stuck. and afraid to risk taking the actions necessary.
You said that in your definition of change agent that a lot of times it's helping people understand that they can do more than they think they can do. When did that first dawn on you?
I think that I learned that lesson early on.
How early?
When I was a child, I had a passion to ride and have horses, and I had, don't know where that passion came from, it just happened. But through that, I had great goals with the horses. Wasn't particularly physically talented at it, not a world-class athlete myself, couldn't afford to buy world-class horses, but just had a vision that, you know, I would like to compete at a certain level and have certain achievements. And by a lot of hard work, some luck, and the willingness to think creatively and do things, you know, when something didn't work, to try something different, realized that you could achieve quite a lot.
Tell us about the acquisition of your first horse.
I was very young.
How young?
12. And my parents were very supportive of me having a horse, but didn't feel it appropriate that they should finance that. So while my parents agreed to help purchase the first horse, it was up to me to care for it. And, of course, the care, the feeding, the health bills, the blacksmiths, and the riding lessons and the horse shows and the gear were really where the costs were. So I was a young entrepreneur to be able to support my horse, and then my other spending needs.
So you started out early as an entrepreneur. Tell us about your first series of startups.
I can't say that I actually had my own companies, but I worked wherever I could, cleaning my dad's office. He was a serial entrepreneur, helping in his business, anything I could. I did have my own small horse training business when I was in high school as well.
Your dad had his own business. Mm-hmm. What do you think, looking back on it, you learned from your father?
I think I learned from my father that it's possible to... I learned many things from my father. One of the most important things that I learned from my father was that it's possible to achieve your dreams if you stick with it long enough. And it's not always easy, and it doesn't always happen the first time around.
Right. How about your mom?
For my mom, anything was possible.
So a lot of possibility thinking growing up.
Very much so. Talk about, I owe them a lot for that.
Tell us about your first failure.
My first failure. And I would view a failure as something that just didn't work out the way I originally intended it to, but ultimately, I don't view things as a failure. But, various times in my career, you go into a position or take a chance, and you have certain expectations. You think it'll play out a certain way, and then it doesn't, and it plays out differently. And to me, those have never been failures, but rather learning experiences and pushing me in a different direction.
I understand your company was involved in the National Capital Business Ethics Award program.
Yes.
How did that happen, and tell us a bit about it?
Yes. In 2012, we were actually named a semifinalist, which was a great honor for us. We were actually nominated for that award by one of our clients, and we found that immensely. We were very honored and humbled by that. One of the tenets of our business is that we are the trusted advisors of our clients. We always treat them in a fair and reasonable way. Sometimes that doesn't always make the most money for us. And so we believe it's very important that they know they're always going to get the answer that's best for them when working with us. And so this recognition in being named the semifinalist of the National Capital Business Ethics Awards this year really was recognition that we have achieved that goal.
Talk about how owning a horse is a lot like owning a business.
interesting question. I think when you have a passion, for me it's riding, whether your passion is golf or something else, one thing that I've learned through that is swim deep. So, and I think that really applies to successful business leaders as well, be they growth companies or be they the leaders of multi-billion dollar companies. And by swim deep, I mean you really have to give it your all. You have to understand the business, get behind it. In many respects, it has to be in your thoughts all throughout the day, the night, the weekend. Swimming at the surface, on the other hand, doesn't get you as far, and you don't accomplish as much. When you swim deep, you have a bigger risk of mistake or error or failure. So you have to be willing to take that risk.
Where did you get that phrase from?
One of my mentors used it, and it really resonated with me. And
it's a great
so
one.
I've used it because I think it really expresses that need.
So your definition of failure is very interesting to me. It's more like a result I didn't like, and
yes.
I learned from it. What's your definition of success?
A definition of success would be achieving a goal. And being recognized for that.
What's your proudest moment up till now, Judy?
Proudest moment in...
Personal or professional?
Personal or professional. I think that we make a difference in the lives, the business owners that we work with now. We help them achieve their goals. And even when I look back in my career before Redstone's, when I was working as a leader at other companies, taking a group of people and having them achieve things that they didn't think was possible, that's very rewarding. Certainly today for our clients, it helps them increase the value of their business. But it's very important for all aspects of the company.
Great. What's the website address, Judy?
www.redstones.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Judy Ruth, who's the founder and principal of Redstone's LLC. I'd like to thank David Taylor, my co-host, for helping me with the interview. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is your Business Spotlight, brought to you by Peter Schwartz, a Vistage Chair with Vistage International. And joining us today is...
Pat Chance.
Pat, who are you with?
I am with CompuData, where I am the Director of Business Development in the D.C. metropolitan area.
And what is CompuData?
CompuData is a technology company delivering end-to-end solutions. And by that, we deliver business management software, which really includes Sage and Epicor ERP. Along with that, we also provide hardware, technical support and planning, hosting, disaster recovery, and professional services to meet the needs of our customers.
Wow. What makes your business special?
What makes our company so special? We've been in business now for 41 years. Our president and CEO is Angela Nadeau, and she was honored most recently in Forbes magazine as the 100 most powerful women in business. Along with that, we've won many business awards, such as Accounting Technology, VAR 100, and the Business Journal.
Ooh. And what do you enjoy most about your job?
I enjoy helping companies and, most importantly, people. Helping them find the right solution to run their businesses effectively.
And why do you think your customers appreciate you?
They appreciate us because we are the trusted advisor. They depend on CompuData to deliver the right solution to help run their businesses.
How can someone reach you?
At www.compudata.com, and please visit me on LinkedIn.
That's great. We've been speaking with Pat, who's with CompuData. This is Peter Schwartz, and this has been your Spotlight for the day. Have a great day. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, David Taylor, with the law firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. And for this segment, we have a young lady by the name of Barbara Newhouse, who's the president and CEO for the Arthritis Foundation for the Mid-Atlantic region. What is the Arthritis Foundation for the Mid-Atlantic region, Barbara?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me, and secondly, thank you for calling me young. The Arthritis Foundation is an organization that works with, across the country, some 50 million individuals and some 300,000 children who have arthritis. In the Mid-Atlantic, we are looking at about 5 million folks with arthritis. And arthritis is a disease. It's actually 100 different forms of arthritis, but it has to do with the inflammation of the joints. So whenever that joint, wherever in your body you have joints that start becoming inflamed and painful, that's usually signifying some form of arthritis. Their common forms would be rheumatoid, osteoarthritis, juvenile arthritis, as I said. And then the other forms that people don't realize are arthritis are things like lupus and fibromyalgia. And lupus is an autoimmune disease where the immune system actually fights against healthy tissue, creating inflammation around the joints.
Yeah. How old is the organization?
This organization is about 50 years old.
And how long have you been associated with them?
I have been with the Arthritis Foundation for 3 years.
Uh-huh. And you're in the capacity of president and CEO?
Yes.
Why did you want this job?
Well, it was important to me because I actually suffer from three or four different forms of arthritis myself. And so this was a way that I could actually give back, do something for something that actually affects me. All through my career, which I've been in nonprofits for some 35 years now, I've always tried to connect with an organization that would have meaning to me in some way.
So you've been doing nonprofit work for 35 years.
Uh-huh.
Why give a life to nonprofits? Why is that so important to you?
Well, it was important to me probably going back to my roots and how I grew up. I am second to the youngest in a very large blended family, 12, in fact. We grew up in a very poor environment in terms of financial poor because of my stepfather being in a car accident when I was just a little girl. And so always, you know, you were sort of instantly thrown into actually being a mini adult, if you will, and helping folks. As we talked earlier, a defining moment for me came when I was probably about 5 years old, and my mom and my younger sister and I, what the two of us in tow, my mom went in to see what then in the state of Iowa was called the Department of Human Services, to seek assistance for medications because Dad was on such heavy doses of medications from the car accident he was in. And oh, by the way, let me just tell you that back in about 1960 or so, the way that head injuries were treated was to put them into the area of mental illness in a hospital. And at that time, in mental illness and head injuries, you had to go through locked jail doors to get to see someone. So that was a very clear moment that's unforgettable.
Right.
Then you fast forward to the kinds of drugs that we're on, and we did not have the forms of assistance programs that we have now. And my mom went in to see the caseworker, and I will tell you that this man, I'm sure that he was an average-sized man like you are and all the men in this room are. However, when you're a little girl, he looked like the biggest man ever. And he looked at my mom and said that we made 99 cents too much to get assistance with those medications. That was a pretty defining moment for me that said, I want to be able to help so other people don't get into that position.
So that happened at five, right? Mm-hmm. Take us back. Were you outraged? I mean, how does a five-year-old respond to that kind of indignity?
Well, when you look at your mom who's tearing up, and your response is, how do I fix this?
Yeah.
Why can't this happen? You know, and there's the natural reaction of a little girl who wants to go up and pull the shirt tail or the coat tails of the man to say, you know, what are you thinking? Why would you not help us? And of course, you know, you don't know all the other complications that go on.
Right. So every day you get out of bed and answer that question differently.
Yeah, actually every day I get out of bed. When you said that earlier to me and we were talking, I get out of bed every day and I look in the mirror and I say to myself, what am I going to do to make my mom proud of me at the end of this day that I've helped someone else?
Yeah. So that's fabulous. So other than all that stuff going on when you were a young child, what else were you doing as a kid that kind of got you to here?
Well, you know, when you grow up in a large blended family, you have to figure out how you're going to stand out. And so it became pretty clear to me pretty quickly that I could become the fix-it person. And I did. I've always been the fix-it person in my family. Brothers and sisters who will seek me out when it comes to healthcare issues. I have actually had two of my brothers pass away from lung cancer, and I was with both of them right up to the end, helping them and helping their families get through those kinds of things. So I've spent my time throughout life. I had another brother who died of complications related to juvenile diabetes that I took care of.
Did you go to college?
Oh, yes.
What did you major in?
I majored, my undergrad work was in social work, and then my graduate work was in healthcare administration.
And what was your first job out of college?
First job out of college was with what was called a volunteer bureau, but my first job was in being responsible for the court referral services, which were minor offenders who were sentenced to do community service work, and to help them sort of rehab and right themselves.
So for when did you start managing and leading people? How early in your career?
Oh, my goodness. I actually probably started managing people. I think my first job out of college, I was already managing people.
Yeah, I mean, it's curious to me how you chose that route instead of becoming a nurse, for example, and being directly involved in delivering care. Why was this the better path for you?
This was the better path for me because, to me, nursing pigeonholed too much.
Right.
And I wanted to be able to take a look at systems. Mm-hmm. I'm about looking at systems and fixing systems.
You were in one when you were a little kid.
Exactly.
A very complicated system.
Exactly. And in fact, I'll tell you that a couple years ago, I was in the hospital, and I was there for a little bit longer period of time, and when I got bored, I took paper and I designed and looked at the systems in that particular hospital and said, you know what, this is a problem.
You would tell us in the green room that you you're very much a team consensus builder. Mm-hmm. A lot of your staff is young people. Tell us more about that.
Well, when we look at decisions, I like to bring together all the best minds and really take a look at the issue and hear from everyone, you know, as much as possible. Now, I know ultimately I have to be held accountable for what's going to happen, but there are so many bright and talented young people, and I think that we need to actually pull from them sometimes and actually force them to take a look at an issue from all sides and just hear from them. And then what I usually use is a real interesting model. I look around and I say, all right, after we've done all of this and we've agreed that this is where we're going to go, I need to know at the end of the day, are you going to support it? Are you going to simply live with it, or you cannot support it? And if I have the majority of my team that are on the live with it or cannot support it, then we sit down again until I understand how we can come to consensus around a decision.
We were pretty shocked to hear you say that there are 50 million Americans. Mm-hmm. Out of 300 to 320 million, whatever the recent census was, who have one of these 100 forms of arthritis. That's a very, very high number. Is it on the rise? And if so, why is that?
Well, it is on the rise. You know, number one, we also have to take a look that arthritis is not just, I want to dispel the myth. It's not an old person's disease. It's a disease that can be affect anybody at any age. And part of the reason it's on the rise is because the obesity rates are on the rise. And so the larger a person is, and if they're not moving around, the impact is going to be very strong on their joints. The idea that when people are in pain, that they should just sit is not what we need to be doing. We need to be moving around.
Great. What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished, Barbara?
Sometimes I'd like to think growing up was the toughest thing I ever accomplished.
That could be the answer.
That's possible. But the toughest thing I ever accomplished, I am going to say.
Growing up through the situation
yeah. is the toughest thing.
How about your proudest moment up till now?
Oh, my proudest moment will always be the birth of my son.
Good.
Always and forever.
Okay. What's the website address?
www.arthritis.org.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Barbara Newhouse, who's the president and CEO of the Arthritis Foundation for the Mid-Atlantic region. I'd like to thank my co-host David Taylor with the law firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. Joining us today is
Gordon Bernhardt.
Gordon, what is Bernhardt Wealth Management?
Bernhardt Wealth Management is a registered investment advisory firm. We're one of the top independent wealth management firms in the Washington, D.C. area.
What makes your company special?
I'd say three things. One is that we are a personal chief financial officer. We act in that capacity for our clients, so that means we help them address their investment issues. We also focus on the holistic approach, so that means we focus on wealth enhancement, wealth transfer, wealth protection, and charitable planning issues for our clients. Second area is that makes us special is that we are a registered investment advisor. We don't have a broker's license, and that simply means that we have a fiduciary duty to always act in our client's best interest. Most of the industry have broker's licenses, and some of them have advisory licenses. And a broker is held to a suitability standard. We're held to the fiduciary standard.
So what that means to a customer would mean that you work in their interest, not for the interest of the stock that you're trying to sell.
That is correct. And the third area that makes us special is that we have a very academic approach to investing. Everything that we recommend to our clients is strictly based on academic research.
And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I love helping clients. You know, I'm passionate. I get satisfaction out of knowing that we touch people's lives. We can then, you know, our role is basically free up their time so they can focus on what's important to them. For some of our clients, that means their family and grandkids. For some, it's their business. And others, it's their charitable interests. We solidify their relationships in those areas.
Great. How can someone reach you?
We can be reached by phone at 703-356-4380. Or on the web at bernhardtwealth.com.
Great. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and we've been speaking with Gordon Bernhardt from Bernhardt Wealth Management, and this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, David Taylor, with Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. And for this segment, we have Robert Massey, who's the owner and president of a company called Bright Star Care. What is Bright Star Care, Robert?
Peter, Bright Star Care is a private duty home care agency. We provide assistance to people who want to stay in their home but need some sort of help to do so, whether it's companion care or personal care or even skilled nursing care. We provide the services so they can stay in their home.
And how long has this company been in business?
Well, Bright Star has been in business as an organization for about 10 years. This agency just opened 30 days ago here in Northern Virginia.
Your agency, the business that you
correct.
Just started.
Yeah, we're in Fairfax, Virginia, and we're 30 days old.
So how'd you get the idea to do this, and why was it important to you?
Well, I'd been in corporate America for 30 years. I've been with IBM, Deloitte Consulting. I was senior vice president of a large IT firm. And I just stopped enjoying what I was doing, quite frankly. And I grew up thinking that was important.
So you could have went into banking or making boats. Why this?
Yeah. Well, you know, about the time that I figured we wanted to do something else, my mother-in-law fell and broke her hip. She was in Tampa, Florida, and we had to find a way to help her stay in her home. And when we started investigating it, we found that there really wasn't much information out there, that we had great difficulty in finding providers, and that the information we were getting was conflicting, didn't know how much it cost or what the options were, and it was a very painful experience. And coming out of that experience, we finally did find care for her. We realized that there was just an opportunity to provide better care and to get the information and educate the market on how to help people stay at home.
Right. And so that was, and you have a partner in the business, right?
I do. It's my wife.
Yeah. And so you're sitting around the table one night having a glass of wine and you're bored to tears and you say, let's start a business.
Yeah. Well, my father always said, do what you enjoy. And I came home and told my wife that I was no longer enjoying what I was doing. And she knew that was code for we were going to do something else. And she was very supportive. It was an opportunity we found to come back to Virginia, where I'm from. And my family's been here for 300 years, and we wanted to get back here. And this was a kind of an opportunity to do that mm-hmm. and to run our own show. And so I lied to her and told her it would be easy. And we came back and started the agency.
Uh-huh. Your family's been here 300 years?
It has, yeah.
So tell us about the beginnings.
The beginnings? That would be Peter Massey in 1678, I believe. He came over, probably kicked out of England, like so many at the time, and came over and in New Kent County. And we've been in Virginia ever since.
Any interesting stories that you like to tell about the family lineage?
Yeah, well, 300 years, you're involved as a family in almost everything that happens in the country. So
yeah.
I guess... I guess Major General Thomas Massey, probably the most illustrious of the family, was a Major General for George Washington during the war, was at Yorktown and led troops there. And at the end of the war, he was given a land grant and founded Massey's Mill, a small town that is about as big as this table, actually, in Nelson County.
So how old were you when you realized I have this big, gigantic family legacy?
Well, you kind of grow up knowing it. There's a big certificate that hangs on the wall from the Society of Cincinnati, which was the society that Washington formed and that Thomas Massey was in right after the war. And you hear the stories from the time you're three or four. So you know who you are every step of the way. And
did you feel like you had to measure up to something early on?
Not really. You kind of knew who you were. And the biggest thing was, what were you going to do that was going to make a mark, right?
Yeah.
But my dad was an entrepreneur.
Uh-huh.
He was in the Greatest Generation, two wars. He owned and ran a quarry that has been in the family for 100 years. So, you know, I kind of knew that being an entrepreneur was one way to make your mark, and starting the agency was kind of a nice way to do something I enjoyed doing as well
right.
as make my mark.
Did you work in the quarry?
I did as a kid. You go and you dig ditches and you pour concrete and you do all of the things that the boss's son does, and he gets the worst job, obviously, every time. But
what did you take away from that experience?
That I did not enjoy being a quarryman, mostly. It was a great job, both my dad and I agreed that it was probably not the career I was going to go into.
Right. So where did you go?
Well, I went to Washington Lee University, came up to Washington afterward, and entered into finance and corporate America.
Why finance?
I don't know. I was a business administration major, and numbers appealed to me, and I liked outcomes. I've always liked outcomes and affecting outcomes. And in business, there are measurable outcomes, and you can affect them.
What's the measurable outcome in your current business?
Keeping people in their home. We know from all of the studies that are out that the outcomes, you live longer and you live better if you stay at home and are supported than if you are in a hospital or a nursing home.
How is that true?
Well,
what does that mean? You would think if you're in a hospital, you get better medical care, don't you?
Yeah, you could, but keep in mind, medical technology has evolved so that almost most things that used to be done in a hospital can now be done at home. So medically, there really isn't a barrier, and technology continues to improve. The barrier, the thing that matters is your social network is bigger mm-hmm. at home. Anxiety, depression incidence is much lower at home. You get out more at home. You are among people that you know. And you live longer and better.
But, Robert, it sounds like that's more expensive, sending people into the home rather than having patients come to you. Is that a myth as well?
That is a myth. Paradoxically, it's actually about 40 to 50% less expensive over time to stay in your home and be supported appropriately. The reasons for that are that facilities are expensive places to be.
So how come I'm only hearing about this for the first time today?
Well, I think the studies are just now becoming available that actually prove this. I think there's been an intuitive understanding that this is probably true, but the ability to stay in, at home and the outcomes associated with them have not been really studied or observed or reported on until recently. And with the baby boomers coming through the aging process now, they will transform this particular phase just like every other phase of life. They're now getting the word out. They want to stay home, and the studies are now being done.
Well, you told us in the green room that you can impact other age groups as well. Talk about that.
We do. We anyone who needs help to be at home, we help. We can provide services for. So kids who may be at home because of injury or disability, we provide those kinds of services, a companion all the way up through skilled.
How do you get paid?
Well, we have a number of different models depending on what's required. The basic is an hourly rate that we charge.
Reimbursed by insurance or what?
It can be reimbursed by insurance. Increasingly, long-term care insurance is stepping in and kind of beginning to people have policies now where they didn't in the past. We do not bill Medicare. We are what's known as private duty. We're not a Medicare agency. But we work with Medicare agencies as well.
So you start this business having spent your entire career up till now in technology. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, technology and sales and finance.
How is that going to turn out to be just the exactly right preparation for you looking back on it 5 years from now?
Well, I think the business model is one of the things. We've got the scale that's going to be brought to this business. You have to run it in a way that allows you to provide quality services on a consistent basis. And business does teach you how to do that.
What do you know you have to become as a CEO that you're not currently in order to be successful at this?
Well, I think I'm going to have to become a leader of people in a very different way than I've ever done before. So I'm going to be running a staff that's not a staff of salespeople or technologists, but of people who give care and who care.
Yeah.
And that's going to be new.
So how are you going to learn that?
Well, I mean, you're going to learn it by doing it.
Uh-huh.
If you're interested in something, you want to do it, you enjoy doing it, I will study my business partners. I have 250 agencies in the country that I can learn from. Excuse me. So I'll learn from them along the way. It is a franchise model, so we have a great base of experience from which to draw. But reality is that experience is the best teacher, and we will do it one family at a time, and we'll learn.
So you're at this for 30 days. If we're back interviewing you this time next year, how would you like your first year to have gone?
Well, we measure our success in how many people we help stay at home. So that's the first measure. It translates into business measures on the back end of revenue and employees and so on and so forth. But I'm looking for 50 to 75 families that we've helped somebody stay at home and live longer and better because of that in the first year.
What's it like to work with your wife?
It's interesting. We commute. I traveled around the world all the time in my last 30 years, and now I travel nowhere except in the car with her to the office and back. But we probably, after 26 years of marriage, have found a common ground. And she runs the operations, and I run the rest of the business, the technology, the sales, the finance. And as long as I don't tread too much on her turf or she on mine, I think we'll be just fine. We're actually enjoying the first 30 days quite a bit.
That's fabulous. Where do you want to be 5 years from now?
I want to have a series of agencies that are operating well, that are doing that. And then I want to be able to start my nurses and my employees in agencies of their own. That's ultimately where I want to go, is to build this network so that we can meet the demand with agencies that I've helped found.
Is your father still with us and knows that you've taken this radical departure?
Yeah, he is. He's 85 years old, still down in Lynchburg.
What's he think of it?
Well, he calls me once a week to laugh at me. I tell him all my troubles, and he listens politely, and then he says, "Son, I've been there. You'll be just fine," and he hangs up.
Yeah. Well, if I was interviewing him, would he be surprised at your success?
I don't think he'd be surprised at my success. I think he'd be surprised maybe at the industry that I chose, because I came from corporate America. But and, you know, he might not admit it, but I think he'd be proud.
Yeah. If he was here, what would you want to say to him?
that he taught me pretty much everything I know. That when he told me when I was 8 years old or 10 years old as a paper boy and do what you enjoy doing, and when you stop enjoying it, do something else, that I took his advice and that it's worked out well.
Good.
I think I'd like him to know that.
Well, I look forward to having you back in about a year and a half to see how it's going.
I hope I come back, and if I can, I'll send my wife.
Okay. What's the website address, Robert?
It's www.brightstarcare.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Robert Massey, who's the owner and president of Bright Star Care. I'd like to thank my co-host, David Taylor, with the law firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is your Business Spotlight, brought to you by Peter Schwartz with Vistage. And joining us today is?
Steven Seiden.
Steve, what's the name of your organization?
Learn to See.
Learn to See? What's Learn to See?
Learn to See is a peer group organization where we're trying to get people that are like-minded with like experiences to go deeper into their own self. So
give me an example of what that means, really.
That means to grow your self-awareness.
And why is that important?
Because as people and the CEOs and as leaders and in any walks of life, it's very important that we understand where our blind spots are and try to help move our own blind spots.
So for somebody that's curious what a blind spot is, somebody listening in and they're curious about theirs, how would you describe a blind spot?
A blind spot is when you end up somehow tripping over your own feet or doing something that you're not even know you're doing because you don't have perspective from yourself or from others.
And because of that, it gets in the way of your results?
Absolutely.
Why is this so important to you?
Because as a CEO and as a leader and as a father and as a brother and in all the roles I've played, I've learned that I've had to be able to acknowledge my own strengths and weaknesses and figure out where I can grow and where I can be the best person I can be.
How can someone find out more about this organization?
You can go to the website. It's learn2c.net.
Say that one more time.
learn2c.net.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Steve Seiden. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this has been your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. I'm joined by my co-host, David Taylor, with the law firm of Buchanan, Ingersoll, and Rooney. For this segment, we have Tim Schaefer, who's the president and CEO of SafeAwake. What is SafeAwake, Tim?
SafeAwake designs, develops, manufactures, and markets safety notification devices for the deaf, the hard of hearing, and the baby boomers and beyond. As we all grow older, we lose our high-frequency hearing. And the smoke alarms today, their notification device is based on high-frequency sound. Did you know that 1 in 3 over the age of 60 and 1 in 2 over the age of 75 cannot hear their household smoke alarm?
1 in 2 over the age of 72 can hear their smoke alarm.
Yes, 1 in 2 over the age of 75 cannot hear the sound that is created when the smoke alarm detects fire in the home.
Wow, that's a staggering number. So what does this device do?
What this device does is it actually acts like an ear, and it listens for that high frequency, high decibel sound from the smoke alarm. And with its specially patented technology, and then it activates two methods of notification. One, a low-frequency square wave sounder, and also an intermittent tactile bed shaker signal that was specially developed in Columbia, Maryland.
So that sounds pretty technical. Did you invent this technology?
No. This started back in 1999 when the firm Combustion Science and Engineering, who are specialists in fire safety, actually applied for an SBIR grant. What they wanted to do was they are investigating what's the best way to awaken a sleeping individual. Is it sound, is it light, or is it tactile stimulation? Dr. Roby and Dr. Claussen applied for the grant, received the grant. They then wrote a report for the National Institute of Health. After 3 years of testing at Johns Hopkins University, 152 patients, both hearing and non-hearing, participated in 443 sleep study tests. What the results of this study were was that for sound, low-frequency sound was more effective than high-frequency. For light, it was not as effective as previously found in other studies. And for tactile stimulation to awaken a person, an intermittent signal to a tactile device was the most effective way to awaken a person, almost 100% effective in the tests.
I can't help but notice your excitement and passion for this product.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's unbelievable. So what makes this so exciting to you, this opportunity?
What makes this so exciting, this opportunity, is that we had a chance to impact and make it better for society, for the people with hearing disabilities. I came into the company in 2008. I was introduced by a professor at a holiday party about 5 years ago today, Al Leonard. He wrote the book, The Power of Product Platforms, and also introduced the Dustbuster and the Sears Workbench in his career to the board of Safeway, who included founders Mike Clausen and Doug Carpenter, and also Dr. Rick Robey. Dr. Rick Robey and Dr. Clausen were the inventors of this technology. We not only had a chance to really form a company, but also to help change the world for the people with hearing disabilities through fire regulation with the National Fire Protection Association, and also through the Americans with Disabilities Act. And we later got involved in Europe, participated, and also with the Japanese fire code over in Japan.
So is this more about the technology or your opportunity to give back?
This is more about my opportunity to give back. Prior to doing this, I'd come off a 18-year career in pharmaceutical and medical devices. I just finished a successful opportunity with the startup of a company called MinRad, and I was under the mentorship of Bill Burns, who was the president and CEO of that company. Also, I look back over my career. I started out in central Pennsylvania, where I grew up, and I had my own paper route. I then had a landscaping business. I was in the placement business for college students way back in the 90s before that was even a business. And then went on to the epoxy resin business, and we sold that company to a very large corporation, and then most recently with MinRad. I've always liked the startup environment, but one thing was missing. I worked from 5 a.m. till 9 p.m. at night and gave up one day a weekend for 18 years, and this was my chance to really give back. I never had the time to ever give back in my career.
So that sounds very meaningful and poignant too, so I'm glad for you. So you're starting businesses as a youngster. Did you live in a family of entrepreneurs?
No, I did not live in a family of entrepreneurs. My dad worked for the Grit Publishing Company for over 50 years, the same job. My mom worked for about six different companies. She was a member of the union in those companies.
So what is it about you that has to do this creative thing over and over again?
Well, I've always liked challenges, and I've been supported by my mother. My mother always wanted me to do better in life and to go out there and do something. And she was, in my earlier years, she was the person behind me. Later on, about 22 years ago, along came my wife, and she's always been supportive of that and get out there and do something. And this was another opportunity to do something with Safeway.
Yeah. So what were you like as a kid?
Was I like as a kid? I played sports. I enjoyed them. I loved school, academics. I tried to participate in as many things as I could to broaden my base.
What did you major in college?
I was a chemical engineer in college at Bucknell University.
Uh-huh. And your first job out?
My first job out was a process engineering position with a German company called Rutgers Works.
How about your first leadership assignment? When did that occur for you?
My first real leadership assignment occurred in Michigan with a company called Cambrex, where I was a shift supervisor with 20 people reporting to me. I had a great mentor there who helped me through, Bob Parlman.
Yeah, you've used the word mentor two or three times in this interview, and we hear that a lot on the show. What do you think a mentor sees in somebody like you that wants them to give the gift of time?
What they see in a person like me is someone who wants to do better in life and better themselves, and will then, they usually ask that how to really say thank you is to later on, when I get a few more gray hairs, to then become a mentor to others.
So who would you look for? What would be the ideal candidate for you to mentor?
The ideal candidate for me to mentor would be someone probably in their 30 to 40 year age group, and someone who really wanted to like develop themselves and had a passion and liked challenges and really wanted to do something.
Yeah. So you've been an entrepreneur your life. You're probably used to having quick successes, not a lot of roadblocks other than financing and some product hurdles. What's it like to deal with the regulatory environment?
Regulatory environment's a very difficult area. I first learned that in the pharmaceutical industry with the FDA and going through that and with the European pharma and other countries.
Well, you don't impress me as a very patient guy. So what's it like?
What's it like? It's a lot of frustration is what it's like. And with the NFPA, the National Fire Protection Association, I give the guys credit at Combustion Science and Engineering. They had a person participating for 6 years prior to my joining them in 2008. I joined them. I served as an industry rep. I was at the meetings continuously pushing forward to get tactile technology accepted, low frequency technology, and to help out the people with hearing disabilities. And we continued on today as they revised the codes and the standards. It moved into actually code 720 for carbon monoxide, which will be coming out. These things were adopted, but it took a lot of effort, a lot of time on their part and participation. I give them credit.
Where do you want to be in 5 years?
Where do I want to be in 5 years?
You were the company.
We would like to grow this company. Hopefully, what we really want to do with the company is get it out so that this technology is available to those who really need it. If that means partnering with someone that's a larger company so that they can take this product out, that's what we'd love to see, not just in the U.S., but worldwide for Safe Awake. For myself, I look at, you know, whatever next is available and the challenges. I would really like to find the right position that fits me to grow.
And do you ever see yourself stop doing this?
No, I don't see myself retiring. I will continue on as long as I can in some way or some fashion or manner.
Define failure to me?
Failure to me is doing nothing. Is not taking action, not trying to do something. I always look at it as I have to produce the results. You know, as a leader, I look to create a vision, and then craft a strategy to follow that, then create the milestones, build the team, and follow through the execution.
So failure for you is not a bad result, it's just no result.
It's no result.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. How do you define a success?
I define success as really accomplishing what we set out to do, achieving the milestones necessary, achieving the objectives within a reasonable time frame.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished up till now?
The toughest thing I've ever accomplished to now is really working on building this company, Safe Awake, with this consumer electronic product, getting it out there, but getting it accepted into the codes.
If I was interviewing your mother, would she be surprised at your success?
No, my mother's played a vital role in driving me forward and my success. She's responsible for it.
Yeah. If she was here, what would you want to say to her?
Thank you.
Okay. What's the website address, Tim?
www.safeawake.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Tim Schaefer, who's the president and CEO of Safe Awake. I'd like to thank David Taylor, my co-host, for helping me with the interviews today. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. We've had a great lineup on our show, including Jody Ruth, who's the founder and principal of Redstone's LLC, Barbara Newhouse, the president and CEO of Arthritis Foundation Mid-Atlantic Region, Robert Massey, the owner and president of Bright Star Care, and finally Tim Schaefer, the president and CEO of Safe Awake. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
So, guess what I just heard?
You mean about the Roth TSP?
Okay, yeah. Well, also,
that bid protest on the DoD contract.
Right, but did you know
who the Senate confirmed for the administrator's job?
Well, what about
OMB's digital strategy?
Jeez, how do you know everything that's going on in the federal government?
I know, because I signed up for Federal News Radio's email alerts.
Be in the know and know it first with Federal News Radio's email alerts. Sign up today at federalnewsradio.com. Search email alerts.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for